Hello, everyone. Welcome to the eTech Leadership Table. This is a podcast where we invite you to pull up a chair, grab a cup of coffee, and join us as we tackle some remarkable discussions on everything leadership. I'm Melissa Wood. I'm your host. I'm the Dean of Leadership Development at eTech Global Services. Hello, and welcome to the eTech Leadership Table, where we just pull up a chair, grab your favorite drink, and let's talk about all things customer service and contact centers. And today is no different, but very exciting. We have Miss Kate Brouse. Is that how you say your name, Kate?
Brouse.
Kate Brouse. Well, welcome to the table. I love having visitors at the table. When I was growing up as a kid, my parents always, you know, we always sit down at the table to have dinner together, and it never seemed to fail. We'd have a guest at the table, and that's why I love having new guests. We would learn their names, we'd learn a little bit about them, and we would just talk about topics. So hopefully all of our podcasters will just, you know, pull up to our table, and we're going to get to know Kate even more and learn. She's got such wisdom that she's going to share. And let me tell you what her expertise are in. Today, we're going to be talking about the now of contact centers. I had, Kate, I had a gentleman tell me the other day, he said, a lot of people don't, they're thinking about pre-COVID contact centers. They're not thinking about the contact centers of today. So I was really excited to have you on. I told him to pull up a chair and listen, because we're talking about the now of contact centers. And specifically for my friends that want to bridge the gap between the high tech and the high touch. And that's where Kate's going to come in and help us today. Kate, would you like to just tell everybody at the table who you are and what you are passionate about?
Absolutely. So I'm Kate Brouse. I live in the Brouse House in sunny Southwest Florida. And I am passionate about all things that connect people, which means one of those things is CX. So I love being creative. I love learning new things. So a few years ago, I was actually sitting at the symphony, and when it was intermission, I checked my phone and I saw a gazillion messages from one of my friends in the tech community. And he's like, oh my gosh, you have to check out this new thing that just dropped. And of course it was ChatGPT. And so I called him quickly. I'm at the symphony, it's on intermission, can we talk about this tomorrow? And he's like, no, do this right now. and I did on intermission at the symphony. And I, you know, that was my first experience with ChatGPT and that level of, you know, generative AI. And I was immediately hooked. And so, yes, I love to talk about the now of contact centers, what the future will be of contact centers, and how we can move from the pre-COVID contact centers to what is going to be possible in 7 to 10 years and what that journey involves.
And what's possible is amazing. So, Kate, I just got my own avatar. I was like, what in the world is this? This is just cracking me up. And then I know everybody's seen this lately, and I've got a lot of messages as we started this podcast. And have you seen the new baby avatars where you're doing the baby interactions and stuff with people's voiceovers? I think they're absolutely hilarious. So maybe both of us will get a baby avatar one day, so we can that's going crazy on TikTok. So
we can relive our youth.
We can relive our youth. That would be really good. Some of it I don't want to relive. We won't get into that. We won't get into that today. But I just, I know that a lot of people join our podcast because they really want to learn. And we're really careful about the people we bring here. We don't just talk about topics. We actually discuss topics and leave us with tangible things that we can use in our world, which is important. And that's one of the reasons we actually wanted you so much to come on our podcast, because I know that people can learn so much from you, and you have such a magnificent storytelling way of getting that across. And so we're really happy to have you at the table today. We hope you feel like family. We hope that you have something to drink and that you can just relax and just have a conversation while I try to pick your brain with some questions, if that's okay. Would that be okay with you?
Oh, absolutely. Right. And I have fans of the whole team at eTech since I first met so many of the team like 4 or 5 years ago now. So yes, I feel very welcome as a guest at your table. Thank you, Melissa. Fantastic.
Well, we have people at eTech at our table, and I've got messages from people outside of eTech that are excited about today's discussion. So let's go ahead and and get started. Get your pen and paper, get your notepad, get your laptop, whatever you're taking notes on, maybe AI can summer it up and send it back to you, however you want to do it. But I have some questions, and get ready to learn, because that's what this leadership table is about. So, Kate, we already know that you're deeply involved in the CX space right now. We see your name everywhere. You're no stranger to podcasts. So would you give us some insight on what's the biggest misconception in the current state of AI in contact centers?
I think a lot of people, when it first came out 2-3 years ago, a lot of people were saying, gosh, this is the death of the contact center. AI is going to be able to do everything. And there's still that perception that AI can do everything, and it can't. However, it is so phenomenal. I mean, AI can do automation to improve your agent productivity. It can enhance CX with chatbots. You can get hyper-personalization. You can get predictive analytics and forecasting, right? You can get real-time assist of your human agents in the contact center. You can get AI training simulations that use all of your real historic data. You can increase your team capacity that you can do more with fewer agents. You can analyze your data sets for trends and improvement opportunities. You can automate QA. You can do AI for assist in compliance. You can do real-time sentiment analysis for both your agents and your callers, so that if either or is having some sort of frustration, you can escalate to the customer or allow that agent a chance to breathe after a stressful call. You can do augmented and visual reality. I mean, Melissa, the list goes on. So people can be confused when they think AI can do everything, because it sounds like it can. It can do so much, but it needs to start very, very small. When so many organizations, small, large, mid-sized, so many of them bought into the hype of AI, they could see the potential, and up to 80% of initial spend on CX AI initiatives failed because it just was over-promising and under-delivering. So I think that's the biggest thing that people don't understand, is they think, oh, we need to do all of this, or we can do all of this. The reality is, you don't need to do all of this, and you probably can't do all of this, but you can choose for whatever vertical you're in, whatever business objective you want, you can find something that will help. And that's what I like to really help people who have questions about AI understand.
Oh my gosh, you are listing out all the things it can do, and I'm just taking notes as fast as I can, and I know everybody else was, and I can see your passion about it, and I appreciate the caution on the misconceptions. It made me think of a quote that I used to have on the wall, and it said, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that makes me think
that's
about
exactly it.
That makes me think about AI. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. It can do a lot of things, but maybe it's not right for you. So I love this topic of what's happening now on the ground right now. And when we think about on the ground, there's no one really more on the ground than an actual agent doing the work, right? So when we go into question two, so what have you seen? Because we're talking about contact centers now. What have you seen on how agents, the actual agents, are responding to the AI tools in their daily, everyday work? How are they responding to the AI tools?
It really depends upon the company culture and how agents have been positioned, whether they are part of the process all along. If companies say, hey, we are going to be rolling out AI, this is not to replace you, this is to augment and assist you, versus some companies who are just like, here's these AI initiatives, and yeah, by the way, some of you are going to lose jobs because of this. There's, you know, both of those exist, and some people are eventually going to lose jobs, although I really have not seen a lot of that yet. Because the incidence of people calling customer support is not dropping. It is continuing to go up, and maybe not just calling, but reaching out across the omni-channel, right? That is only escalating. But the number of people who are wanting to enter the CX space as a frontline agent has dropped drastically. And so when you combine those two and you tell your agents, look, this isn't to replace you, this is to assist you, those agents are having very positive experiences overall. However, some companies are doing things that feel very invasive. And I especially think of Japan, where they are doing something that would never fly here in the US, where they use AI to tell whether or not you're smiling. And if you're not smiling, you can get dinged for that. And it's actually an AI. It made a big headline splash last year. And I thought, wow, now I get it. We all know that when you're smiling, your voice changes. And when you're smiling and your customers are seeing you, they feel like you're friendlier. And we also know there's real scientific data that when you smile, it releases endorphins and hormones in your body that help you feel better and connect more. So there's a lot of reasons to be expecting and hoping that your customer service agents are smiling, whether they're with somebody in person or on the phone, or even if they're just doing a chat. If they can remember to smile, they'll feel better about the interaction. But monitoring that, that's something that has a lot of people asking questions. So reality is, depending upon where you live, the culture that you are experiencing, and how you have communicated with your agents, agents are going to have a wide variety of reactions to the rolling out of AI. However, I've seen some companies do it really, really well. There's one in particular who has decided to make all of their frontline agents that are their premier agents that have been there a couple of years, that have great scores, they are using them to train and tune the AI, which becomes something that they look forward to. So now the new agents are seeing, if I can just stick around, then it becomes a promotion and it becomes a step up. And now you know something about AI and how to tune and train it and be involved in that process. That becomes a stepping stone to leadership positions in the same organization or new jobs at others when you're ready to find a new company.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That I love that approach where it makes them have hunger about actually learning it instead of being so defensive about it.
Right. That all boils down to that company culture.
Yeah. The company culture. You're right. That is it. I remember, I really like the integrating where people understand a little bit more. When we understand what something is, we're able to adapt to it a little bit better. So I think that's really good. So, all right. You've seen some, I did not know about them monitoring smiles. So that's something new to me. So what's something unexpected you've observed about how, now we've talked about the agents, but what's something unexpected you've seen about how customers are responding to AI interactions in contact centers?
There's been some really, really fascinating studies, especially with people who have social anxiety or maybe on the autism spectrum, that they actually prefer interacting with AI. And some customers, especially in a healthcare or medical setting, may feel more comfortable asking AI for advice or questions rather than their doctor face-to-face. So if you're experiencing a symptom that makes you uncomfortable or may have some sort of social stigma about it, there are definite situations where interacting with an AI is important. And it's really interesting to note that in the beginning, when contact centers were adopting a lot of AI, a lot of them really didn't want to admit that this is an artificial intelligence. They wanted you to have that perception of, hey, I'm just talking with another human being, just like you. And that has really kind of changed, partly because there are, you know, a lot of privacy and data and compliance issues that are being developed around these things, but partly because people want to know, because some people are going to feel much more comfortable interacting with an AI when they know that. And some people are going to be like, oh my gosh, I absolutely refuse to interact with an AI. You're going to get both sides of that camp. And I think the really important thing on either one of those sides is to make sure that when somebody's like, hey, I need help now because this AI can't assist me, or I need help now because I refuse to speak to AI, that there is that seamless handoff to a human. And that's a really important thing for ops teams and developers of those AI things to really take the time to get right. Because if you have rolled out this AI and now you're like, somebody's screaming into the phone, agent, representative, operator, or they're pressing 000111. I mean, I've been in those situations and you can't get out of that AI loop. That's something so important. And that should not be something that you discover once you've rolled it out. And so many times that's the problem. So you want to make sure that you have tested, that you've tested it before you roll it out, that you roll it out as a small pilot to a, you know, dedicated queue of callers with dedicated agents who know what's going to happen, know what to expect, and know what they're looking for if it breaks down, and then can give that feedback.
Boy, this can be a brand destruction. Just like, you know, the IVR Kate used to do that too. It still does to some companies. You are stuck and it becomes an enemy. Like you are just an enemy of the IVR. You cannot get the press six voiceovers. You just cannot seem to get out of it. And AI is the same way. I do have recently I had to pull statements, you know, for tax purposes and everything. And I fell in love with my AI companion on my banking account. It was just, everything I needed immediately. So that's how AI can be really good. And that's what I was a customer. So speaking as a customer, I had a fantastic experience. And when I needed to speak to an agent, it was 10 minutes into the conversation that I was able to get everything I needed. And there was just one other thing that I needed from an agent level, and it was a seamless process. So hats off to some companies that are able to do that handoff process seamlessly, right?
What a some great of example, and it's so nice to hear those wins.
Yeah, it really is. And I think probably someone listened to some of your expert advice by saying maybe they started, they did small things, right? I'm sure they could apply it to everything they had, but they really honed in and perfected the things that AI can do. Okay, let's switch gears just a little bit, but I don't know if our people at the table know how very passionate you are about inclusion and accessibility, right? In the workplace.
Yes.
That's something that's from a heart standpoint. You want to mention anything about that before I ask the question?
That is what lights my fire. That's what keeps me coming back over and over and over. And it is something that's very important to me. So thank you for calling that out. So go ahead. What questions do you have for me today?
Okay. So what immediate concern to ensure that the current AI implementations don't create some new barriers now when we talk about accessibility and inclusion?
This is a really important issue because AI typically has the exact same biases that we as humans have. And the world is just not set up for people who have disabilities, whether it's a physical disability or a neurodivergent disability or a cognitive disability. We just have historically designed things for the masses, and that's great. However, if we are leaving out the people in the disability community, they actually have a huge spending power. And so allowing things to be designed by including the ability for people who are not the normally able people to be served by your company or your services or your products is phenomenal. And it is a great place to be a differentiator right now. But a lot of AI is not designed. It's not designed to have concerns about whether you can be understood. So somebody who might have a voice issue and or not be able to speak very clearly or have a stutter or things like this, AI might not be able to be served to serve those people very well. And so making sure that when you are choosing AI off the shelf or when you are designing it internal, it's really simple, Melissa. And it's something that I've said over and over and over. And I did not create this phrase. It was actually created in Eastern Europe way back in the 1500s and 1600s when people were being absorbed and didn't want to be absorbed. But it's just simply this: nothing about us without us. So put that to the disability community and you say, if you want your product to serve people within the disability community, then what do you need to do when you are deciding about what AI you want to use? Tag people in your organization. Hey, we are looking for people with disabilities to test this. Go to the disability community at large. There are disability organizations in every single community that would be very happy to partner with companies and to know that companies care enough about the disability population, about people who have needs for accessibility, they would provide those people and move forward in a way that can be much more inclusive. And it's just that simple. I mean, it's something you're like, okay, well, we didn't stop to think about this. Well, you don't have to think about it. Just put somebody on your team to test the product who has those issues. It's just that simple.
You know, your passion, what lights your fire, it comes across very, very clearly when you talk about this topic. And, I told you that I was, I'm pretty particular about who I sit at the table with, right? And when I read about how passionate and the things that you've done to to help people with disabilities. And really, when we look at in the world of AI, I wanted to share with you, and I know you haven't heard this yet, but my dad recently, he is a communicator at heart. He is a professional communicator, but he recently got diagnosed with brain cancer and had to have surgery. In this surgery, they cut a nerve and it messed his speech. He has a hard time speaking. So exactly what you're saying, when he is trying to, on the phone, to deal with, he is encountering AI tools. He's encountering, different obstacles that he's never had to encounter before, that it's not ready for him. It's not ready for him. The world was not ready for him. And so I'm starting to see that in a real world thing, that this is so important. That's just one situation. There's millions of situations like that where we're just not thinking about little things that we can do to make it more accessible to people with disabilities. And I absolutely want to say hats off to you. I think it is phenomenal that you're making a space and you're creating intention around, making the user experience from a customer, even an employee aspect, getting them involved in some of this technology. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, well, you're so welcome. And thank you for sharing that about your dad. And that's why one of the things that's so important when you're considering people who might be differently abled and have a problem, you are never going to be able to design for every single person, because there's going to be somebody who's a one-off, who has something. And so that's another reason why, when you need to connect with a human or a talk to text translation or a TTY or something that you can very easily identify yourself, that's another thing that companies are smart to build in. If they say, hey, if you have a disability, you might want to hear all of our different options. You can press this or put it in the chat. And so just putting that out up front. And the amazing thing is that when we are building these systems, we are preparing all of us for exactly what your father experienced. Your father never expected to, have to have surgery that would cause a speech impediment. Right. That wasn't on his radar. But as we move forward and design for these types of things, so we are including these people, we are making it so that the next person who has that kind of issue is not going to struggle as much as your dad is, as much as the current people are. I love Josh Blue. He is a disabled comedian. He was born with cerebral palsy. And he likes to get on stage and get people aware of that it's not bad to talk about disability. It's not wrong. It's not embarrassing. It's just something that happens. And he says, we're all just one bad bike ride away from having a disability. One little trip where you fall and hit your head, or a surgery that cuts a nerve that you are, not sure you're going to get back.
Right. I'm living this real time. When we picked this topic, the now of contact centers, just a few weeks ago, Kate, I tripped downstairs. And for the first time in my life, I have been unable to walk. I had to go through surgery and get new bars, put in my legs. But so I'm like 4 weeks post-op, and you start paying attention to where I can go to the store, where I can get in the easiest. And so it's amazing that you've just said that, because I'm actually living in this world, not only with my dad right now, and then now myself. Now, both of us have a different form of disability. But it really starts to make you think. And you know what I said just yesterday to my husband? I said, we as a whole need to do a better job of making arrangements for people with disabilities. Right. Because I am just get frustrated that I can't go into a certain place because it's not accessible to me. My dad's getting frustrated because he can't talk to the proper contact center, or whoever he might be calling, because of his disability. So I love that you're here and we're having this language. Perfect timing. This is the now of contact centers. And so if you are a decision maker, if you're in charge, if you are just an agent here and you want to, and your company is pushing out some new technology, bring it up. It's okay. Like Kate said, it's not anything to be embarrassed about. We all either have been through it or going to one bike ride away from it. So it's definitely something we want to talk about. All right. Now, when we talk about overcomplicating, I know that I've overcomplicated things. I'm sure you probably never overcomplicated a thing in your life. Never. But never. And everybody at the else table, they haven't either. But what is one thing contact centers are overcomplicating right now in their adoption of AI? And what is a new approach that maybe you think they could take?
I think I kind of touched on this just in the beginning, is that so many leaders of contact centers kind of have this deer in the headlights, and they're like, oh my gosh, my list of things that I need to implement is really so long. But it doesn't need to be thought of that way. So if you're at the beginning of your contact center journey, an analogy that I like is a flywheel. Okay. So like for those of people who understand how motors work or how energy is stored, they're going to know what a flywheel is. Great. But it's a great way to think about it for those who don't know. It's just a way of storing energy. And you can think of a very simple one. If you think of an old timey potter's wheel, not one that you plug in, that uses electricity to keep running, but the kind where a potter would sit and kick this little mechanism that would turn a very, very heavy stone. And once they kick it and kick it and kick it and kick it and get it going, and it, you know, goes on through the shaft that keeps the tabletop trimming so they can shape their pottery, it goes and goes and goes. So they kick and they kick and they kick and it gets spinning. And then after a while, it's just every once in a while that they kind of like move their foot. And so spinning up AI is more like that. You need to be very intentional with some maybe very heavy shoves or kicks in the beginning. And then as you iterate, as you do it over and over and over, you start to get momentum and it becomes easier. But to keep this momentum moving in the right direction, so if you have a flywheel and it's going in the right direction and all of a sudden a kick comes in from the wrong direction, you're losing that momentum. So as you are deciding, we are going to build an AI flywheel, if you are, you really have to make sure that you have everything in place with an intentional direction, and you're always going to be kicking that wheel in that same direction. And part of understanding how to do that is you need to have fast feedback loops, you need to have learning loops, and you need to have insightful iteration. So each one of those is so important. I mean, with the ability of AI to crunch data and give you feedback in the moment, there is no reason why you are waiting till the end of the month or the end of the week to pull a report. You can be pulling those reports, so getting really fast feedback. So you are seeing, hey, this AI initiative, new chatbot that we rolled out this morning is already having these challenges. Let's fix it tonight, right? Or even in the moment, if your team is having that kind of bandwidth. And then you need to make sure that you have learning loops. And learning loops means that when you learn something, you don't just go, huh, you know what? Our chatbot isn't performing like expected, or our customer sentiment is showing that they're really frustrated about a certain product that is breaking. There needs to be connectivity and loops, and that means there needs to be cross-functionality. If you're having a problem with a product, you need to bring in the whole team, marketing and sales and ops and the, you know, design team, so that it can be fixed. And so the more you use AI, the more the whole team has to buy into it. And then again, that just insightful iteration, and not just like, hey, we have some data, let's go ahead and use it to, you know, iterate. Not all data is useful, but you really want to make sure that you are taking those insights, take a step back, take a breath. Is this clear data? Is it consistent? Have we seen it over, you know, a set number of time and circumstances? Is it something that is worthwhile fixing? Is it something that maybe we should just say, you know what, we're not ready for this AI initiative. You shut down your pilot, or you say, we can easily fix this and get our customer outcome if we move forward. And I think the really important thing there, again, is to make sure that all of your AI initiatives, whatever they are, they shouldn't be focused on your company. They should be focused on your customer. Don't benefit the customer, if you don't know why, you're like, well, let's do this to help the agents. Well, that's great. But what are the agents serving? Your customer. And so your AI implementations should always be customer centric. And that way you will always be able to design with them in mind, because you can have agents saying, hey, we want ABCXYZ. And you can go, that's great. We'll make the job of the agents easier. But at the end of the day, if it's not something that eases your customer experience and their omnichannel journey through their experience with your company overall, then you might say, we really appreciate the feedback on this. Let us, you know, table it for now until we can do some more research and then come back to it at a later time. Always, always, always customer focused AI.
This is why eTech does business with you, Kate. This is why we've partnered with you in the last several years because of this knowledge. It made me think about a quote from Ken Blanchard, which is one of my favorite leadership authors. He says, begin with the end in mind. And I love the clarity that you create about it can do so many things, but what's the end goal? And when you keep it our mind, the end is serving our customers. And that keeps us from getting confused and lost along the way. There's so many different paths we can take, but ultimately the destination should be as simply as you put it. So I love that you bring just clarity and passion to everything. And so I want to last question for you. I wish I could just keep you forever, but I know that it's beautiful in Florida and you want to get out there and enjoy that. So my last question is around something that's really I'm passionate about, and that's leadership in a contact center. I have dedicated my entire life to preparing leaders for the now. And so being that this podcast is about the now. So what is, in your mind, the most critical skill that leaders in contact centers need right now to successfully navigate the technology transition? What is the most important thing if you're speaking to leaders here? And I know, Kate, that we've got leaders sitting at this table with us today. So what do you say to them?
Well, the most important thing is first, you have to first realize that there is a huge experience gap. So if you think you're doing well and you're not Amazon or you're not Netflix, although they've made some changes lately that are really making me scratch my head. If you think you're doing well, you're not, because there's a huge experience gap. And I want you to think, I mean, you just mentioned, Melissa, that you had, while doing your taxes, a great interaction with AI, with the human agent. That is by far the exception and not the rule. So until that is the rule that you are delighting all of your customers, there's a huge experience gap. And AI is there to help fill that. So again, it's part of this customer-centric mindset. So AI can be used to start closing that experience gap. And we are a decade out from closing that gap, because the farther ahead we get with AI, the higher the customer expectation is going to become. So we are going to be climbing uphill, which means that there is still going to be a need for a very human-centered workforce for the foreseeable future. But if there's one thing that contact center leaders need to figure out before anything else, it's how to get data and make sure that it's clean, because none of the AI that you are going to want to use to build and close this customer experience gap over the next 7 to 10 years, it's all going to rely on clean data. And that is actually a lot harder to come by, especially at small and mid-level organizations, than one would think. So, I mean, I know even internally for us, it is something that we talk about all the time. How do we make sure that our data is accurate and clean? And it's something that we work towards. So that would be my number one takeaway for anyone. And then just become AI literate. Make sure that you know what is possible and what isn't possible. And don't for a moment think that when you start an AI initiative that your problem is solved, because without a human in the loop, AI was designed by humans. And guess what? We as humans, we mess up a whole lot. We fall flat on our faces, figuratively and literally, Melissa.
Yes.
We fall flat on our faces, and so does AI. So you have to understand that AI is going to be a long-term strategy that should be focused on the customer experience, closing that experience gap. And over time, we'll be able to get up that energy in that flywheel as it's spinning and just give it little kicks to keep it moving. But, you know, getting it started, especially in larger organizations, it is not something that is going to happen overnight. And it takes thoughtful consideration and clear strategy in small pilot projects with that fast feedback, those learning loops, and that insightful iteration to be successful at it. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there. So if that have experience in doing this and can guide. So if you're an AI leader and you want to help, there are lots of people that you can help. If you are a brand or a contact center leader and is like, hey, I really am not sure where to begin, go find somebody who is an expert that can help you. And I'm always happy to talk to people.
Yeah. And you heard it here first. I hope that you say everyone saves this podcast. They share it with friends and neighbors and family so that you can know that you definitely have some tangible action items. You have a resource. We reached out. We reached out to Kate for some help as well and her team. So we know that they definitely can help. So thank you, Kate, for taking your precious time. I know that we can buy lots of things, but we can't buy time. So I appreciate you investing your time with us and giving us such, I have taken so many notes and I knew inviting you to the table today would be just a blessing to all of us. So thanks for your passion. Thanks for the clarity on direction and keeping us focused on where we need to go. And we're going to have to invite you back again, if that's okay with you.
I would love that.
Okay.
Thank you, Melissa. It's been so nice.
Enjoy your travels and safe travels. Thanks again, Kate. Until next time, we'll see you at the eTech Leadership Table.